This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
It won't be!
Michael Jordan and the Bulls changed the culture.
Dennis gave us that edge on the front line.
We were winning.
Congratulations.
Get the trophy.
Yeah. Jerry Krause said, we're dismantling this team. I never saw it ending like that. It's about to be
on. I let my anger motivate the players.
What's up?
We look for number six.
They all understood who I was. My mentality was to go out and win. At any cost.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:37. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lee Tree Lynn, Sharmila Ganesan, and Arvind Yuvaraj. And you know what? I mean, if you didn't watch The Last Dance last year, then maybe you didn't have an abiding fear of somehow slighting Michael Jordan in some unknowable way and him showing up at your house to burn it or something. But if you did, then you know what it's like to have a beloved MCO watch, because today is the 1 year anniversary of the MCO being declared, which means it is the 1 year anniversary of us watching a lot of stuff at home and not going out much and not certainly not going out to the cinemas often. So that's what we're discussing today.
I think that was also a great example of 1 year of these sorts of things becoming events in a way that they probably wouldn't have at any other time. I remember when The Last Dance came out, like every other person on social media was like saying they were watching it. They had opinions, you know, they were sharing GIFs. The same thing with something like Social Dilemma, right? Where everyone was re-examining their relationship with Facebook and Instagram. And again, I don't think that would have happened if it wasn't for the fact that we didn't necessarily have a lot of things to do. So the things we watched ended up being a really big deal.
Also, they kind of changed the timing, right? They were supposed to release it, I think, 3 months before, 3 months after, or something like that. And then they timed it so that people would be at home or in lockdown or quarantine to actually binge the show to that extent, because it wasn't like ESPN and Netflix for global audiences. Also, I say this with all the love, but hopefully this is the first and last episode of this kind, this MCO anniversary.
I don't want a second year one, yes.
Yeah, no, never again. But yeah, I mean, the amount of things that we wouldn't have watched otherwise, that we sort of binged during the MCOs, CMCOs, RMCOs, and its various stages is interesting. It's also more interesting that it's more content than I would have watched normally and in cinemas. So even in the absence of cinemas, I think I've seen more movies in the last year than throughout my entire life.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think there were some points where I just couldn't anymore, in the sense that I was so sick of engaging with movies as content. I think that there is a real problem with us thinking about movies and television only as content to be churned out. That's how you get something, I think, with respect, like Emily in Paris.
I'd repressed Emily in Paris.
It's all back. But I really think that spending too long in the presence of the algorithm changes the way that you interact with movies and television. And in my case, it was not for the better. I found myself thinking, I don't like the predictability of it. I just didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted to. So I'm really excited to talk about the things that did in fact stand out, right, from the last year of watching, because I also don't think I'm alone in this. A lot of it is a blur. Much like a lot of last year is simply a blur, a lot of what I watched also ended up being a repressed, you know, thing, like Emily in Paris.
No, I completely get it, because in preparation for today's show, I sort of decided to at least think back, because I'm thinking, oh, 1 year of actually solidly watching something almost every day. What did I watch? What do I want to talk about? And really, nothing comes to mind. Which is not to say there weren't things I enjoyed, but I have to actually actively think about them. And sometimes I'm like, did I watch that last year? Was that only a year ago? And it's a weird feeling. It's almost like you've kind of lived in some sort of weird aquarium and you don't know what's happening outside of it.
I wonder if like 5 years from now, if we watch the things that we watched in 2020, if it'll come back to us like some kind of weird PTSD.
You know, Emily in Paris? No!
some kind of thing that we don't want to remember or relive. It's just like it's all just blacked out. One thing also is that the stuff that you said that it's difficult to remember, right? But for me, it's the same, difficult to remember, but it also created a bigger impact last year than it would. Like, let's say if I just watched it normally. So Community, we watched Community last year, like all seasons. And I think if I had seen that like in sequence or when it was out or when it was popular, quote unquote, it wouldn't have been as effective as me watching it during the MCO. And I don't know why that is. But when thinking of content today and things to talk about today, like you said, completely forgot that I watched, what, 6 seasons of Community.
Yeah, actually, that literally came to mind only just now when you mentioned it.
Yeah.
So to save us from this being a show where we just stumble around like a bunch of amnesiacs being awoken by each other going, Community, you remember? I did want to know, what do y'all think is are the hallmarks of a good MCO watch? Because to me, they fall into very distinct camps. So there was the stuff that I watched and was a comfort to me. More often than not, they were heartwarming, they were sweet, they were also often things that I'd already seen. And then there was the stuff that was startling and that was very emotionally evocative. I think things that were visually beautiful also really helped, because you're getting tired of the same four walls, you're getting tired of, you know, not able to leave, in some cases, your taman, sometimes your district, sometimes your state, never the country, you know? So I think that the visually beautiful stuff I found really quite amazing. But yeah, that's why The Last Dance stood out for me, because it was so emotional. I didn't expect to feel so emotional watching something that is fundamentally about human endeavor, about people trying to go beyond, and also about good old-fashioned petty drama.
I think comforting and sweet is a big one. I realized I was re-watching things that I knew I really liked from the past. Gilmore Girls is one of my, you know, something I used to enjoy and get a lot of comfort in. But also, I think more importantly, stuff that you can kind of put on, you don't mind stepping away, doing stuff. So you're sort of at home doing your home things and you can have something on playing. You can revisit. It doesn't require that sort of intense engagement. That was definitely a hallmark of some of my MCO watches. And I think things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
Modern Family.
Modern Family, definitely. The Office. Oh, I watched so many episodes of The Office. And Friends. You know, things that I can sort of take in chunks. Definitely those. But I agree that the other part of it was then I would crave for... So one of the things I really remember from last year was Trial of Chicago 6. And I watched it, I remember... Chicago 7, which I think just sort of jolted me out of this feeling of being, you know, stuck in some ways and getting me to think about a larger world.
For me, I think it had to be weird or weirder than whatever we were going through. So it's just pure escapism.
Are you going to say Lovecraft Country?
Lovecraft Country was a good one, was a really good one. I also binged on a lot of A24 films. And A24 is weird by default. Like, they only make weird films. So it was easy to sort of escape. The stuff that was more familiar, the more blockbuster things, I sort of avoided for a while. Because one, because they were way too familiar. And two, because I'd seen them already. So I was looking for something new, something fresh. And just basically stranger than whatever was in the news. So enough to hold my attention for maybe, what, two and a half hours? Or if it was a series, then it had to be like weird and kooky enough for me to pay attention to for however many seasons. And I think that was sort of like the criteria that I was going for.
So running the gamut from sweet and comforting all the way to stranger than what's actually happening in the world, that's what we're using as the hallmarks of our MCO watches, or the stuff that we... I wouldn't say saved us. I think that's, you know, very melodramatic.
Kept us company.
Helped us get through the year, really, is what it is. We're talking about this because it is the 18th of March. It is 1 year on from the MCO first being declared. We want to know, What are the shows and movies that have kept you company? What have been some of your favorite watches this year? And what defines a good MCO watch for you? Call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Excuse me. Hi. You guys selling the car?
Yeah. Yes. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I might like to buy it. What do you want for it?
Well, I was thinking somewhere in the ballpark of the original price, but considering the circumstances, I'm open to a reasonable discussion.
All right. I mean, it is an amphibious exploring vehicle, so it should be fine, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's nice to talk to a reasonable man. Now, you're a sportsman because you look very fit.
Oh, I ski.
You ski? Oh, excellent. Love skiing. Yeah. Do you travel a lot?
For work, yeah.
Europe? Eastern Europe?
All over, really.
And I assume you'll be taking the car with you on these trips?
Me? Oh, no. No. I'm looking for something for my daughter.
Your daughter?
Yeah. You know, safe, slow vehicle. Good starter car.
Starter car.
That's right.
I have contained my rage for as long as possible, but I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves! Begone, vile man! Begone from me! A starter car! This car is a finisher car! A transporter of gods! The golden god! I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds!
BFM 89.9, it is 7:49. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Our supercut today is focused on MCO watches. What did you watch during the MCO? And what made it stand out for you? What are the hallmarks of a great MCO watch? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I have to say, listening to that clip from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia makes me remember that one important element to this also is sometimes just watching people lose their minds. I think that there is a real freedom in watching someone get really unhinged, or to loan the term untethered, you know, expressing full rage. And that comes back to that point we were making about sometimes it's great to watch emotional folks.
So I wanted to say that that actually ties together neatly. Earlier, Arvin mentioned weird watches and then about people losing their minds. The one thing I actually am really glad I made the time for to watch over the last year was the entirety of Rick and Morty, which has plenty of moments of people losing their minds in fairly mind-blowing scenarios, but it's also super weird. So it's this animated series, right? And very much in the Adult Swim style. And yes, I get it. Just watching people do these crazy not necessarily the way anyone would behave in public is so cathartic. Rick and Morty was so cathartic for me over the last year.
It's that, and it's also watching people who are extremely ignorant, like ridiculously ignorant and dumb. And that's the Always Sunny gang. They are just completely disconnected from reality or what's going on or the things they can say and shouldn't say. The person that we just heard is Dennis Reynolds, and he's one of the worst people or worst characters like ever written. He's every bad thing thrown into one, and a full-blown sociopath. And just like, just watching those like elements sort of knock into each other, and sort of clash is like you said, it's so much fun. Always Sunny has been like, it's been around for like 14 years, so like 14 seasons, and it has always been like one of the best things to turn to on like YouTube or like full episodes, just as one as comfort and also just as a what is exactly going on in this episode and trying to figure out how these people function.
So after our last show on unlikable characters, right, which we spoke about because of Rosamund Pike in I Care a Lot and about 90% of her roles at this point, I've started rewatching House and after looking for the clip. And what I found is that, weirdly enough, I don't know what we are, what phase are we in when it comes to MCO stages. I mean, officially it is the CMCO, but emotionally, who knows? Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I'm finding House really striking the right nerve and the right point. I think it is exactly that sort of misanthropy, angry, tired, you know, kind of thing, and but it's also really funny and there's heartfelt stuff in there. But you don't have to like him. So you can kind of invest in him without liking him. And I think that's just about the level of emotional investment I'm looking for in my TV shows right now.
That's really odd because I think I'm in such a different headspace. The thing that I've been watching a lot of lately, and when I say a lot, I got through five seasons in less than a month. And they're like 13 episode, 1 hour seasons, right? Of This Is Us. And I think that's the exact opposite. It requires a lot of emotional investment. Mm. It requires you to really warm up to the characters because it's about things like family and mental health and relationships between people. But I love it so much. And I think a part of it is because I'm missing those kinds of connections and maybe a little bit of drama, that kind of togetherness that the show gives you. And I've just found so much comfort in watching that over the last couple of months, really. I'm really glad Arvin recommended This Is Us, and I'm so glad that you did because I've loved it.
This Is Us is such an anomaly because all the stuff that I said before about being weird and strange, it's none of those things. It's actually a very mildly soapy show. It's not even like anything in the Shondaverse or Shonda world or whatever that thing is called. It's very tame. And it doesn't do bombastic things. So the show, but like you said, it's about a lot of things that I think people are craving during the lockdowns and MCOs and stuff. So that show was like through and through a gift. Like maybe my favorite thing that I've watched all year, This Is Us, and like all five seasons. And I think it's just because of the things, like you said, you know, it's just investment, like getting attached to people that you genuinely love to see on screen.
So we've been asking you what have been some of your favorite watches over the last year. You know, it's been a year since the MCO was first declared. And also, what makes for a good MCO watch? You know, what are the hallmarks of this? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have this tweet here from Nathaniel who says, unearth a shining beacon of heartwarming wholesomeness in the Apple TV series Ted Lasso. It chronicles the efforts of the titular American football coach tasked to coach an English Premier League football club. It's the perfect salve for these dark and dour times. And, you know, I hear so much about Ted Lasso. It's also garnered a whole bunch of critical and awards acclaim, and I keep meaning to. And that, I think, speaks to the weird push and pull that we're in, where we have more time than ever, but there's also more stuff than ever.
And also more streaming platforms than ever, and therefore having to make the tough choice of which one you want to subscribe to. Apple TV, for me, is a huge blind spot, but I've heard of some really good shows that are available on there.
The thing about, so just going to Apple TV for a while, is that I know I've seen a couple of series, but going back to what we said before, I forgot what they are. Like, I forgot the name. There's something to do with myths, something, and video games. That's all I know, but I forgot what it is. But same, like Ted Lasso, I've heard a bunch of things and I want to check it out.
Meanwhile, Paul simply says, How to Get Away with Murder. While we're speaking about Shonda Rhimes, I think that's a great one.
I've never watched it. Maybe same. That should be my next binge one.
Same, yeah.
So that's the thing, right? This is going to sound really odd. I don't know why I struggle with engaging with Shonda Rhimes, because I know that once I do, I'm going to get too into it. As somebody who's now out the other end of Grey's Anatomy, I understand that she's just really great at manipulating me. And so there are times where I'm not in the mood for it.
So Bridgerton is also her, right? And it had,
yes,
it was
exactly.
This huge sensation. Mm. And I sort of very safely didn't step on the boat because I was worried that that's all I'd be watching.
I don't do it because I don't like doing it after, but I'm enjoying it while it's going on because you can't stop and you get hooked. But after I'm done, I'm like, why did I just waste like 45 minutes or like an hour?
It's candy.
It
you know
is.
What I mean? It's emotional candy. You feel really good because you're feeling so much, but then after that, you're like, oh.
You have a
what
tummy
is
ache.
This? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have also Helmi on Twitter saying countless movies, but my fave was Extraction, which we can talk about in a second. We did review it. For series, Cobra Kai, You and Kingdom, Nightfall, Designated Survivor, and Locked Up.
Kingdom is awesome. I mean, I started watching that very early on in the MCO. I love it. It's such a sort of like Korean period drama, imperial costumes, zombies. Like, yep. Who wouldn't want that?
So the zombie thing has sort of left my radar the more this lockdown has gone on. But then it came out like towards the beginning of it. So it was okay. It was fun enough.
What about Extraction? So I think Extraction is a really interesting one because none of us really engaged with it that much. I mean, we reviewed it and we all said as much. But it's interesting because it hits some of the hallmarks of a blockbuster. You know, it takes us to places around the world. It's shot very much like a movie that is meant to be seen on a big screen. And I'm not sure why it didn't hit the mark with us, because I know a lot of people loved it.
So I think it, and I remember saying this even back then, it's perfectly watchable. It's perfectly watchable at home. But I think for me, it's telling that when I read Extraction just now on the message, I was struggling to place it. And I thought they were talking about that Tom Cruise movie.
Same thing happened, yeah.
Yeah. Then I realized, no, wait, I think it's the Chris Hemsworth one. So it is that. There's nothing particularly distinctive about it, while simultaneously actually being quite a nice watch.
I was thinking about the Tom Cruise movie, which is not Mission Impossible, but he plays the guy in Mission Impossible.
That's the one I'm thinking of, and I can't remember the title.
Is it Jack Reacher?
Yes, Jack Reacher. Okay. Yeah, Jack Reacher. I was thinking of that. And I'm still buffering. I'm still trying to put together the plot and what happens in Extraction, and I don't think I'm thinking of the movie that it is.
He's an extraction agent in Pakistan.
Right.
Arvind's still blanking. So, yeah. It's like pre-MCO brain.
It's at 25%.
I think that there are really great action sequences in it. The reason why I'm struggling to, in reviewing our review, which is fundamentally what's happening, because I can totally get why Helmi puts it as their favorite. I completely understand it. And yet, I think what I'm struck by is how personal. I mean, it's no surprise that movie tastes, TV tastes, always going to be a very personal thing. But it's funny because the MCO and the pandemic as a whole is such a collective experience. So it's so strange to see, even in this collective experience, what we reach for, what we love is so different. So keep those thoughts coming. We're getting lots of great messages and actually great reminders of stuff that we watched during the MCO. We want to know what got you through the year and also what defines a good MCO watch, a good watch for the pandemic that makes it stand out. Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
People love superheroes. They swoop out of the sky and save the day. People love that cozy feeling that superheroes give them.
My deepest condolences to Robin's family. She just stepped in the middle of the street.
Supes lose hundreds of people each year to collateral damage. Diabolical.
They're all like that? All of them.
Yeah. Pardon my French. Fuck those fuckers. I've got the boys together. Jonas.
To do what?
Spank the bastards.
BFM 89.9, it's 8:07. Are we even still on the air? have we been taken off? Because that was a fantastic clip. You are listening today to a Popcorn Culture Supercut, which is focused on MCO watches, because it is, after all, I hate saying it, really. I feel like it's a day that we would all rather just go unnoticed, but it is the 1 year anniversary of the MCO being declared, which is also the 1 year anniversary of a lot of us watching a lot of stuff. So we want to know, what have you been watching and why you love it? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And that was just a little bit of The Boys. And, you know, we've been talking about sweet and heartwarming versus unlikable and strange. And I think The Boys falls pretty firmly into the second category.
I know, right? The hair I was going on about This Is Us, and I forgot that actually before This Is Us, the thing that I binged was actually The Boys. And I think it kind of neatly did a couple of things. One of the things we haven't been getting are these kind of superhero movies. And subverting that trope, making the superheroes into the sort of bad guys, really fulfilled this sort of I think, perverse need of mine to watch this kinds of stuff on screen, but also in an interesting way. The show is also incredibly violent, full of bad language.
You're kidding. I would never have known.
I mean, you wouldn't guess from that sweet clip, but Carl Urban is in it and he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just one of those shows that is like hugely satisfying to watch at home and hugely satisfying to watch as a binge. I think it's one of those things.
I like 100% agree with all of it. Like, I love the first season of Boys. Nothing tempted me to watch the second season of Boys. And I think it's because I don't like anyone in
it. So you took a break, like you'd already watched one. And then, yeah, so I both were out when I started watching it. And it's that kind of show where you can't stop watching.
Yeah. So I took a break. I didn't continue with season two. And I think it's also because, like, personally, I don't like the subverting superhero trope thing. Like, what would Superman do if he was bad? For me, like, just me, I'm just like, I don't care. I don't want to watch it. You know, leave Superman, Superman. Leave Captain America, Captain America. So I kind of avoided season two just for that.
So we've been asking for your MCO watches, and we have so many messages. So Kamaru Nizam on WhatsApp says, my MCO hallmarks, apart from reruns and movies, it's been documentaries and cooking shows. Hoo-hoo-hoo. And, you know, I feel that. I feel that really hard. So currently, I'm watching Somebody Feed Phil. There are four seasons up on Netflix, and I missed it totally. Everybody said it was really good. I didn't fully get it. And then we recently started watching it. And I found that it was odd because at first I wasn't used to watching somebody this nice anymore on screen as a host. If you've never watched it, Phil Rosenthal was one of the co-writers, I think co-executive producers of Everybody Loves Raymond. And now he essentially gets paid to go around eating food and meeting people. And he's a really odd and sweet character. And the same people who did Anthony Bourdain's shows, Christopher Collins and Lydia Tenaglia, are involved in this. And I think that that's why it's really cinematic in terms of how it's shot. It's beautifully shot. And then you've got like this goofball just going around scarfing down burgers.
Well, firstly, what do I have to do to get paid to go around eating meeting people?
Write a sitcom.
I know. Well, is that all? But I think there's something to be said for shows like that, right? Shows that, one, involve food, but two, actually have their heart in this sort of kooky, sweet place. Just now during the break, I was talking about how one of the shows that I found a lot of pleasure in was Nailed It, which is completely not about great food. In fact, it's very much the opposite. It's about amateur, very amateur people attempting these huge baking challenges and failing at it. But what I love about it is how everyone's just so nice on the show. Mm. No one's mean. No one makes fun of you or scolds you for not achieving a challenge. In fact, it's a sort of collective celebration of mediocrity. And at the end, you get a prize for making the best worst cake.
It's not like a Hell's Kitchen thing.
Not at all. In fact, it's all like, it's all okay. We can all eat our probably has eggshells in it cupcake and be happy. And I think, I don't know, there's something very sweet about it.
I don't think I've seen any cooking shows on TV, but then I've been binging on a lot of vlogs on YouTube just because we can't travel and it's nice to see people traveling and stuff. A lot of vlogs, and those vlogs always have like good food in it. So it always revolves around looking for some hidden gem somewhere in some restaurant and eating something that, you know, they are like specifically looking for. So those things I binged on.
Somebody Feed Phil gave me that heartsick feeling of not being able to be in Saigon or not being able to be in Bangkok. And I think that the best travelogues, the best travel shows should do exactly that. So if that's your thing, I would soundly recommend that. We also have James saying, although I'm not one to watch series, I did indulge finally in Kim's Convenience. It's a harmless, lighthearted sitcom, funny, self-deprecating characters, good writing, and I got to see shots of my city, Toronto, while feeling homesick. Being quite finicky with these types of shows, I have to admit that I was hooked and I binged for the first time. So we've spoken extensively about our love of Kim's. It's so sad that it's ending.
Well, except me. I haven't watched it, and it's actually going to be my next binge, thanks to both of you.
Yeah, I think something to do with the producers or whatnot. But yeah, it is. Harmless is the best way to describe Kim's. It is so, so harmless.
Alex says, Emily in Paris.
I don't think we need to...
Speaking of harmless.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't think we need to be mean about Emily in Paris any more than we already have.
Mm-hmm. But you know... Okay, here's... Okay. I'm going to work my way to this, all right? I think that if we're talking about beautiful travelogues and we're talking about Kim's Convenience having shots of Toronto and you missing that, or, you know, feeling a longing to be there, for what it's worth, I mean, I think that France is such a beautiful place anyway, but Emily in Paris, with its ridiculous celebration of croissants and, you know, just French life as she perceives it, really does make you feel like you want to be in Paris. If nothing else, it does exactly that.
I would totally take the Paris without the Emily.
I was going to say that
we've been through this.
It's important for people to remind you that you hate some people. And I think that show does it extremely well. You know what I mean? Because you're like, you're so isolated and you forget that you don't like some people. And then Emily shows up and you're like, yeah, I don't like a lot of people.
Hey, you know? Speaking of emotions, we have a tweet in that vein, actually, from Shamil Razak, who says, there have been too many. I cried buckets watching K-dramas once again and What Happens to My Family. It's good to know I'm still a human with a heart after so long in isolation.
That's the exact opposite of what Arvin says, but I love it.
Well, it's about feeling connection one way or the other. Either you love people
hate
or you hate
love.
People.
Yes. Such an MCO thing.
It is. It is.
You know, when I watched Crash Landing on You, so I'm not a K-drama person, but when Crash Landing came out, I just really wanted to watch it. And then I lost sleep. I lost hours of my life and I lost so much water from my body because I cried so much. And I think that there is something to be said about soapy stuff. You know, we talked about this as earlier. K-dramas really know how to do this. And I think that I don't know if I would have reacted in the same way if we weren't going through this collective MCO thing, but it did make me feel all the feels. And so there is something to be said, I think, for drama.
I think the feeling all the feels is definitely a thing. You know, again, I think it's that brain fog, but I certainly remember getting a lot more emotionally invested in the things I was watching. This Is Us is a great example. I'd be weeping at every episode. And sometimes for no reason other than I think sometimes you're just feeling it too much. Maybe because there's no other outlet for that in the last 1 year as well.
Also, the mention of K-dramas, I've been watching a lot of like Korean content over the last year. And I think it's because, I don't think it's because it's specifically Korean. It's also like in languages that I don't understand and have to depend on subtitles. I think you just pay more attention because you don't understand it, right? So you have to get like sort of more invested, doubly invested than you would like an English language program.
Korea has also been actually great at pumping out the content, knowing that there's a lot more people watching.
Space Seekers?
Oh, yeah.
Raiders? What did we just watch?
Space Sweepers.
Yes. So I think Korea giveth and Korea taketh away, right? Like, I don't think that it's all even. But you're right. There is a lot of stuff coming out. We also have this from Alfred, who says, my MCO watch list, Kingdom, and Don't Hate Me, Singaporean sitcoms from the 90s and early 2000s on Netflix. And all the K-dramas mentioned also reminds me of the K-dramas that I had watched and forgotten I had, despite not being a big K-drama fan.
So this is interesting. I also rewatched, well, this is not Singaporean, but I rewatched Kopitiam over the MCO as well. Like, and not sort of as a binge all the episodes, but just episodes here and there. I'm not judging at all for the Singaporean sitcom because I think it's a great time to revisit some of those things that we maybe wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah. And those two movies from Our Boys to Men are from Singapore.
Yes.
Yeah. So those are good movies. I watched those, I think, like a couple of months ago, just for the sake of it, for the fun of it.
Speaking of crazy comedies, we just did this recently for Chinese New Year, right? Where we threw back to All's Well, Ends Well. And that was a real high point for me, where it really felt like joy and sugar being pumped into my veins through a lens of nostalgia and childhood. And it was just the best. We have just a couple more to get through before we take a break. But Cece says, Queen's Gambit, original show, great visuals, relatively short and snappy. Alice in Borderland, which I've heard of but did not watch. Non-English, super addictive, as the storyline felt like a combo of Battle Royale, Hunger Games and Saw. Also, cliffhanger for second season.
That is such a stellar description. I've not watched Alice in Borderland, but I want to watch it now.
Alice in Borderland is amazing, but it's also extremely violent, extremely dark. So I don't know if it's like the perfect MCO watch for me because it can get pretty depressing. But like they said, like once you get hooked, you're hooked because they have a way of getting you to come back. There's no way you cannot finish the season. Let's just put it that way.
Captain Arriva, and this is a recommendation that I've heard a lot as well, Money Heist. Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Bella Ciao, Ciao, Ciao.
I have not watched Money Heist, but I've certainly danced to its danced to Bella Ciao like several times at several small visits to people when it was allowed.
I've seen the memes. I've not seen the show.
That's also a MCO hallmark, isn't it? Justifying any social interaction we've had. Yes, I was there.
I know.
But I wore a mask. I was alone, actually.
It was in my social bubble. Actually, it was just me in my apartment.
Yes, it's just a process we all have to go through. Please let us know, what did you watch that got you through the last year? What's some stuff that you've particularly loved or enjoyed? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
All I have for you is a word. Tell it. It'll open the right doors, some of the wrong ones, too. Use it carefully.
To do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
I'm not saying I'm getting here.
No. Something worse.
I gather you have an interest in a certain Russian national.
Why don't you bring me in?
You really want to know?
He can communicate with the future.
Time travel?
No. Inversion.
Aim it and pull the trigger. You're shooting the bullet. You're catching it.
Whoa. Well, I've seen too much.
BFM 89.9 is 8:23 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvind. We're talking today about MCO watches. So the stuff that got us through the last year, and we want to know what yours have been. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're still getting messages, but before we get to them, so Tenet, it was... Firstly, the reason why that clip was so long was because the way they did the music, it was impossible to cut anywhere else. But the other thing was also, I was surprised at how much that trailer revealed of the movie. I think that even if you haven't seen the film, you would be familiar enough with the sound of it, with the tropes of it, with the sort of singular moments that the trailer plucked out. And yeah, I mean, it was a strangely good, but perhaps overly descriptive representation of the movie.
Tenet is, to me, the perfect example of what movie watching was like in the last year, because I know I really enjoyed it. I remember being super excited and going to the cinema, being super excited after. I also have major like fog brain because I can't remember most things about the film. And I watched it twice.
That's because you've been incepted.
Oh dear, we're merging Nolan universes now. And the year that's gone by, I would believe it. The thing is, I think that I cannot overstate how exciting it was to be able to watch one of these things in the cinema. And we talked about it when we did. And, you know, 6 months later, we're still pretty much in the same place. I don't know how that makes me feel.
Yeah. And it was one of the biggest releases, the biggest release, I think, other than maybe...
Well, I mean, Mulan.
And Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. But I think none of us were excited for those two. So Tenet was one of the big ones. Also, it was like IMAX and just going back in a big way. Just listening to that clip, at one point he says that in order to do what I do, I need to understand the threat that I'm going to face. And I'm like, I've seen the movie twice. I don't know the threat that you're going to face. Like, I still don't understand what is happening. And I think it's just a description of the movie and how complex it is.
You know, one thing that I loved about Tenet was that I remember loving it. And I remember that excitement and that feeling of wanting to watch it. I haven't rewatched it since all that much. I think maybe once, despite the fact that actually it's a very good home rewatch because you can rewind. I think it's very crucial to be able to pause, rewind and go, he has the what now? Yes, he does.
But are you rewinding?
dangerous look, spoiler territory.
I'm not saying more. I'm not saying anymore.
All I'm going to say is I don't need to understand. All I need is to get it. That's what the movie taught me. I just need to, like, you know, just roll with the punches.
I think any movie that's, I think a great MCO movie is a movie that you can rewatch just that one movie again and again and you still find new things.
Yep.
What I was also going to say about Tenet is that it looked beautiful and it took us to Croatia and it took us to London. And for its James Bondy feel, it was worth it if for that alone. There is this message. So we're getting lots of people messaging in, but there's one in particular that I wanted to get to because it opens up a question that I want to know. Iskandar says, it's rather ironic. It's a movie called Contagion. Before MCO, it was just another movie. Meanwhile, since COVID, so relatable. And I think the world is divided into people who consider Contagion an MCO watch and the ones who don't, right? I'm curious to know, firstly, where do you guys fall? Secondly, at what point are we going to be willing or be excited to watch movies about 2020?
So I loved Contagion when I watched it. It's a Steven Soderbergh film. I love most of the things he's done. But even then, it made me deeply, deeply uncomfortable. So there is no way I would watch Contagion now or in the last year. But in terms of a 2020 movie, not for me, not yet, not for a while. And not certainly not about the pandemic. I'm fine with maybe something being set during the pandemic, but not necessarily about the pandemic. But I don't think I want a, like a Songbird, right? Which a lot of people had huge problems with because of how it turned it into a horror movie. I feel like it's still too soon.
Yeah, Songbird had a weird, like I had a weird reaction to the trailer. Like you just felt like uneasy watching it. So yeah, movies about 2020, no, maybe not for the next decade, hopefully. But stuff like Contagion also I actively avoided, like stuff about sickness, stuff about the any other kind of pandemic, any kind of weird apocalypse or, you know, people being at threat of like extinction. all those things are actively avoided. But Contagion is a really good movie, like you said. I watched it like a long time ago, stuck in my head. And I think for that reason also, I just didn't need to revisit it because I remembered it so much of what happens in the film itself.
Same here. Watching House actually just personalizes that even more because now anything could be anything. It makes you want to, you know, live in a bubble. But I do think it will be years before I want to ever watch a movie about the pandemic or about the experience of being in the pandemic, unless maybe it was a fantasy. And even then you would need years of moving away from it because so many people actually lost people. And, you know, it's not going to be easy. We also have, let's see, Alex saying Ozark.
I've not watched Ozark, but I've seen such great things written about it.
I think I've seen the first three episodes and then I got distracted by something else. It's a good show. For some reason, you just don't continue it after that, which is I think you can say that for a lot of shows on streaming services.
So we have this from Fauzan on Twitter, who has two such violently contrasting shows, The Office and The Wire.
They sound like they might be similar, but they're really not.
Because you get a crossover with Prison Mike.
Tanks.
Oh, there you go.
No, but I think that both those shows are so bingeable. And there's something about that, about the sheer quality, I think, of something. Because The Office, part of why it got a rejuvenation was because we were all stuck, but also because it suddenly became available on a variety of streaming services in the States and then here. And so it became really easy for people to rewatch. But I also don't think that people would rewatch it so much and with such affection if the quality wasn't sound to begin with. And the same is true of The Wire. These are just good shows.
I feel the same way about Parks and Recreation, which I revisited in its entirety over the MCO. I was reminded of how immensely watchable it is and how well written it is and how great the characters are. And I think all of these things are really important for you to want to invest your time in rewatching an entire bulk of a show.
Can I just quickly say with Parks and Rec and The Office, this, you've got to give it time. So I think that for people starting now, if you start from season one, you're not going to understand why it is that we sound even remotely enthusiastic. Mm. They take a while to get going.
I think it's the same with the rest of development. So I just started watching it again a couple of months ago. But also, speaking of stuff that is like, you know, long running shows, I've started watching the MCU again from the first
long running shows
from the first Iron Man. I've got like what, 21 movies to go. Yeah, I'm at Iron Man 3 now.
So you're watching it in what chronology?
Its own chronology.
So internal, the okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a ways to go.
Can you just watch Harry Potter? Can you just watch Harry Potter? You have the time. I don't understand what is happening.
I feel like the gentle nudges are now turning into just violent, like, do it already.
Yeah, just yeah. Maybe in the coming month after the MCU.
Right, so in 10 years.
We've heard this before. Devin says, recently I managed to binge on all 6 seasons of The Sopranos during MCO 2.0. I think this goes well with a recent episode on characters we love to hate based on the main character of Tony Soprano. Seriously, anyone listening to this, watch the show now.
I have never watched The Sopranos, to my eternal shame, and now I feel like that should be my next sort of binge watch, because why not?
I've also heard that it's not as heavy as it looks, so maybe I'll give it a shot. I've been avoiding it because it looks like heavy, heavy mafia stuff, but a lot of people have said no, it's actually quite light and it's also a bit funny.
It's proto-HBO.
It's proto-HBO, yeah.
Vivigan says, The Office, Modern Family, all the late night shows on YouTube, and Rick and Morty season 4. I love Tenet also, particularly that overhead shot, scored by that Travis Scott song. I felt that it was a great moment for cinematic hip hop records, a movement, if you will, started by Kendrick Lamar for Black Panther.
Wow, that's very specific memories of a movie that, again, I honestly said I don't have a lot of memories of.
But it's making me interested to go check it out again.
Right, and like do a rewatch, right?
Yeah.
Arcane Guy on WhatsApp, Snowpiercer, Black Sails.
So I don't know if he's talking about Snowpiercer, the TV series, or the movie, because the movie is excellent.
Yeah.
I haven't watched the TV show, though.
Same.
I want to. It's very hard, isn't it, to fully explain why it is that you might be avoiding a show you know is good. I think it's just so personal.
Yeah, I feel like I love the movie so much that I don't want it tainted by possibly not that great a TV show.
I think it's just because I heard bad reviews, so I thought, maybe not.
Witness the power we yield. Witness it. Feel it. Anyway.
Except Ken for says, Harry Potter, apparently.
You see, I had let it go, but clearly.
Someone hasn't.
Ken says, Midnight Diner, the second time now, or maybe even the third, that we're getting a recommendation for this on one of our shows. Amazing aesthetics, great colourful character developments, reminds us that it's fine to be imperfect and still lead a fulfilling life. It's a great way to wind down after losing our sense of time while working from home.
Yeah, Midnight Diner is one of those that I actually legitimately put down on my list based on someone's suggestion in a previous show, just because it sounds so interesting.
I've only seen it like in thumbnails, and it's something that the algorithm keeps pushing at me. Like every time I finish a show, like Midnight Diner shows up and I'm like, why? I don't even know what this is. But now I'm going to check it out.
This next one is also just for Arvin. We have J-Ho saying The Crown.
Oh, my favorite show of all time.
I mean, if we hadn't forced you to watch season 3, you mean it didn't go back and check out the first 2 seasons?
No.
I'm thoroughly disappointed.
Sounds like a wild time, The Crown.
To be fair, I still stand by that the first 2 seasons are the best.
I actually should go check it out because, like, I think we spoke about it, like the aesthetics, the production, just like in terms of scope, it's huge, right? So it's worth watching. It's just that maybe the latest season did such a number on me in terms of like boredom that I avoided the previous seasons altogether.
So it is just about time. We're just about running out of time. But keep those thoughts coming. What are the shows that you enjoyed watching during the MCO? What do you plan to watch next? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. And if you want to look us up on social media, we are BFM Popcorn. That's it from us. Stay tuned for the rest of our programming. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.